last 10 minutes are reserved for those who feel they may drink and haven't had the chance to share. And now to share his experience, drink, and hope with us, we have Dan.
Hi, I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic. Is this close enough? Too close? I've been sober since 2011, and I haven't spoken in a while, so I'm glad to be here. I feel like I shouldn't share because I'm in like a emotional headspace, whatever that means. I'm feeling some kind of way, you know, which means nothing. I don't know, I want to give like a good message tonight, but I'm feeling like, feeling a little bit off, but I guess that's where I am, so, you know, I'll speak from where I'm at today, but, so I'll just follow the format. My family is not alcoholic. I'm like the only person for miles around in my entire family who has any sort of drug addiction at all. So I guess I just say that to mean that it hits all types of people. I had a really good childhood. My parents are still together. I had a lot of insecurity around my dad growing up, which sort of like I latched onto as something to worry about instead of just growing my own way. My dad's a genius. He's like actually a rocket scientist. He works for NASA. That's like what he does. Some people thrive, like you could take a good family and thrive with it. I sort of like learned how to just not grow up, sort of. I like let my parents do stuff for me, and I think I sort of like immatured in a way as time went on. And I remember my first drink and drug experiences clear as hell. Like, if you asked me about like high school graduation, I'd be like, you know, or like college, a lot of youth experiences, you know, but like I remember exactly where I was and what I was thinking, like the night I smoked weed, the first time I drank. The first drink I had was a Zima. You know? Do they even make Zima anymore? I don't know. I remember the first like opiate I took, the first benzo I took. These were like holy experiences for me. And I fantasized about doing drugs for a long time before I ever did them. My friends and I would watch Half Baked like religiously on repeat, you know, and this is like 6 months before I ever smoked weed, and it was like an obsession of mine. And so it was very progressive for me, you know, like I had this good childhood and I like studied and all that stuff. And I had this secret that even my friends who drank more than I did and smoked more weed than I did didn't seem to share with me. Like I had one friend who he and I seemed to like understand each other about drugs. Like he like understood, you know what I mean? He was a drug addict. Like I didn't know it at the time, but like other people didn't seem to like really care about how many particular Vicodin I stole from someone's medicine cabinet, but like he got it, you know? And I would like study, but he had this like physician's desk reference in my house, you know? Like this like from like the 1960s with pictures, colored pictures of like all sorts of pills. And I would like study it. I'd memorize that shit. So I sort of had an unhealthy relationship with substances in the beginning. As I said, it was very progressive. I stole a lot of things from people's medicine cabinets. In high school, it was a lot of like drinking, like waiting for the, you know, doing the week, and then on the weekends, like getting someone's older brother to buy beer. And if like the beer didn't go through, then the weekend was wasted. It was just sort of like it all centered around substances. And in college, as I said, I had a lot of friends who got drunk like all the time. I went to this big state school, and people were getting bombed constantly. And I didn't think I was an alcoholic because I was like, you know what? I don't really want to get drunk tonight. It's like Thursday. I kind of want to chill. And so I was like, yeah, I'm not an alcoholic, you know. But as was explained to me later, it's not really about. I think this is true for me. It's not about how much I drank or what I did. It's about my relationship to drugs and alcohol and how I use them, you know. And I started to peel away a bit from life, and I found that drugs were like an extremely efficient and reliable way to do that. You know, it's like at first actually drugs were sort of a way for me to get like in the moment. You know, like if I was doing something, even with friends, it just made it better. You know, like I could secretly take some sort of pill, you know, or drink something or smoke something. And then I would be like really present. I used to sort of describe it as like, it's still me, I'm just happy. You know what I mean? And that's sad. It's like, there's nothing like wrong with me. It's like, I love that phrase, like we're not bad people trying to get good, we're sick people trying to get better. There's like something physically, and as a lot of us say, spiritually and emotionally and mentally, different about my brain and my experience than a lot of other people's, you know? And, like, I really feel like that was sort of true, that there's just, like, an itch that, like, I couldn't scratch for a long time. And with the, you know, drugs would scratch. It was, like, perfect. It was my solution. And then over time, like, when I was not on drugs, the itch became worse. So drugs aggravated it, but they didn't cause it, you know? It was, like, it was there from the beginning. It's kind of the same as an itch, you know? It feels really great for a few minutes, and then it's, like, shit. Like, now it's really itchy. Or, like, a scab or something. I don't know. You picked the metaphor. So it got really bad over time. I got to think back to this, because this reminds me of how it was. You know, I don't need to tell you too much about the particulars of using. We've all been there. But as I said at the beginning, I was able to be in the moment. And then over time, I just sort of, like, didn't want to face stuff, you know. And it was also a great way to just take me away. So using in isolation was a big thing for me for a while. You know, I could go out and drink on the weekends with my friends and get drunk at parties and stuff, and that's one thing. But then I could also do that alone in my apartment, you know. Or I could just take drugs, and, like, if I was, like, really stressed, like, I don't know what I want to do after college, oh my God, you know, instead of, like, researching things and, like, thinking about that, like, I don't know, I guess that's what normal people do. I pretended it wasn't there, and I took my drugs and, like, you know, whatever I did, watch Netflix or something. So it was just, avoidance is a huge character defect, as we call it, of mine that I only learned about in recovery, and only recently, actually. Like, avoidance is such a big part of this for me. So, I did a lot of messed up stuff. Over time, it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I remember, you know, like, 5 years ago or so, like, the best night of my life. This was, like, the pinnacle of my existence. I moved to New York to become a teacher in Bushwick, and it was, like, crazy hard. I didn't know how to ask people for help, and I was, like, becoming Ryan Gosling in that movie, half Nelson. Anyone with drug experience knows that's, like, not exactly right. Like, he was still showing up to his job, for instance. So I was, like, missing days of school, and then I missed a week of school, and you know, I couldn't stop using and drinking. And it was, like, summertime, so I didn't have anything to do. And, like, the best night of my life was, no one was around in my apartment. My roommates were out of town. I took the projector from school and, like, I basically, like, stole it for the summer and, like, was projecting nature shows on my wall. And I had, like, four different, I had, like opiates, benzos, I had Adderall, I had, like, a bottle of I had weed. I had everything I needed, and I didn't have to talk to anybody, you know? And that was, like, the best night of my life, you know? It was, like, and it still sounds kind of appealing to me. Like, I'm not going to say that that's crazy, you know? But that's confirmation. I'm still a drug addict. So I'm alcoholic, same thing for me. But, you know, it was, like, from there, it just got crazier and crazier, and there was, like, a flight I took from, I visited my friend in Vietnam, and, you know, I just spent the whole time just going to pharmacies and taking pills, and on the flight home, I couldn't get high anymore, so I bought, like, a bottle of Advil plus codeine, which you can buy, and took the whole box, like, 40 pills, you know, because I couldn't get satisfied anymore. And it all ended for me when I went home for Thanksgiving, and my parents saw how I was, and they were like, oh my God, our son's gonna die, which I definitely think I was gonna die. And they threw me into this detox. Actually, the final week of my using, I got this bottle of something in the mail that I ordered from Hong Kong, and some, like, weird Valium ripoff, and I was, like, taking it like crazy, and I blacked out for a whole week, you know, and I was doing this crazy shit. Like, I met my girlfriend's parents, I went to her house, and I was, like, I wasn't, like, forming short-term memories anymore, so I was, like, get together, let me take a picture, and then they, like, and I was like, get together, let me take a picture. Get together, let me take it. And they were like, and I had like 89 photos on my camera of them being like, and then like the camera, like, this is like real, you know. And I stole all these pills from their house, and I was drinking their liquor. And when I went to my house, my dad saw me, and then he saw, you know, my sponsor always points this out to me. I, like, dropped uphill, and he found it, you know, and, like, that was when he needed to, like, throw me into the car and, like, take me screaming to a detox. But my sponsor's always like, you know, like, that was God saving you. Is it odd or is it God that you, like, dropped that pill? And I always, it's odd, you know, it's for me. But you know, I went to this detox for like a week, or a psych ward, I don't know the difference. And I was just, I didn't, see, this, it's always like a little bit of a problem for me, because I didn't come into AA on my own. I tried to go to two meetings, and I, like, rolled into this one meeting 45 minutes late, like at Housing Works or something, like around here, and it was like 10 people who were all like, who is this person? And I came in and like put my hand up and I was like, I think I'm angry and I don't know why, because I saw someone say that in a movie, you know. And then they all were like, okay, keep coming back, like, here's our numbers. But like, no, it didn't mean anything to me. So it's a little bit hard for me, because I, you know, in this program it's attraction rather than promotion, right? So like, I've seen a lot of people who are suffering, and I want to abide by that principle of ours, because it's taken from decades of experience. You know, it's the best suggestion we have for how to get people in the program. But I also, you know, feel like sometimes, like, I need to do more to try to help people, you know. So it's always a struggle, because I didn't come in here willing, and I really applaud people who do. I really admire people who do. So I was put into a rehab from there, and it saved my life. It was the best thing that ever happened to me, you know. And I would hear people speak in this, like, drugged out fog. Well, when I first came in, I gave someone my shoes. Like, I was, like, I was so high. I was so out of my mind, and I, like, stole drugs between the detox and the rehab, that this kid was, like, I was, like, here, I'm not going to need these in here. And I gave some kid my shoes, so I didn't have shoes the whole time in rehab. I was so messed up. And all the guys after a week were, like, hey, dude, we're glad to see that you're getting better. We all thought that you were, like, mentally disabled from the drug use. Because I was slobbering, and, like, my tongue was really big. I was really, really messed up, you know, but I could hear people talk in the rehab about how they isolated too, you know, and I thought that was like, wow, like, I didn't know anyone else did that, you know, guys talking about how they would come home after work, like cops. My roommate was a cop, and he would, as soon as his shift ended, he would, like, get a bottle of vodka and fill it up in his car in this big cup and then chug it on his drive home, so that by the time it hit him, he would, like, be pulling into his driveway. And then he would drink the rest of his night with the shades drawn, you know? And I was like, wow, like, someone else did that too, you know? Which seems normal now, because in AA, we surround ourselves by other addicts, which is what I need to do to survive. But it also makes some behaviors seem normal, you know? Like smoking crack. Like, that sounds normal, you know? Drinking with the shades drawn, that sounds normal. Like, not going to work for a week. All this stuff, it starts to be like, oh, well, you know. And it was such misery. I was so unhappy at the end of my using, you know, and into this rehab. I was just so, like, I thought an alcoholic was someone on the street who was like a bum, you know, as a lot of people do. But I was just like, I don't know how else to put it. I was like, it was just every day, it was like, damn it, I woke up again, you know, and like, the only way I could make it is by, like, numbing myself with pills, which were starting to increasingly not work, you know, and I just hated myself, and I wasn't doing anything with my life, and I was so anxious all the time, you know, and I need to tap into that. Like, I know a lot of us felt that way with drugs and alcohol. It's just, like, so much anxiety, and so, like, depression is sort of a nebulous word, but, like, it was whatever that word means, you know, and I carried that into rehab, and it was just, like, you know, I wanted to do it right. I was really paranoid about, like, not doing it right in rehab. And so I was, like, always, I was the guy, like, taking notes in the lecture hall, you know. And some of these other guys were like, dude, what you need to do is just, like, come out of your room and, like, talk to us. Just, like, hang out. And I was like, oh, that's so much harder for me than just, like, isolating and, like, studying my, like, addiction psychology, you know. Because isolation, I don't know, it doesn't really matter, I guess, if I was always like this or if drugs and alcohol turned me into this, but it's like so much more, isolation for me is so much more than just like not going out on a Friday night. It's like, I can isolate in so many ways. I can isolate, I've learned, in the rooms. I can isolate, I go to meeting every day, basically, and it's still very easy for me to isolate. I put my hand up and I share at most meetings I'm at. And still, I can talk in a way that doesn't really get down to the core, you know? And also, sharing is sort of an easy way to do it, because no one talks back to you. you know? It's not a real conversation with another human being. Like, that's hard for me right now, and it's, like, it's frustrating sometimes, because I think, like, why don't I have, like, a ton of friends right now, you know? And I do have plenty of friends, but it's, like, everything's always wrong, you know? That's, like, another trait of an alcoholic. And it's, like, the whole isolation, staying alone, that type of thing. It's, like, I really learned about it in rehab, and it's, like, it's still a part of my behavior. So I got out, and so I guess I, you know, how do I stay sober? You know, how have I stayed sober? It's going to be kind of, this part's going to be kind of boring, because I don't know, I'm going to say what a lot of people say about how they stay sober. The biggest thing for me is meetings. Like, I have to go to meetings a lot. And when I don't go to meetings, I can still stay sober for a bit, but I get really sick. I get, like, I feel like I'm physically sick, sort of. Not, like, nauseous, but, like, some people probably know what I mean. There's, like, some feeling. It's just, like, it's like the bottom has fallen out of my head or something. It's like my brain's broken. And I just, that's what I'm experiencing right now, you know? So, like, I went on this trip with my family, which is, like, a mind fuck in its own way. Sorry, I'm not supposed to. Too late to ask that question. It's, like, being around my family is, like, really hard. And I also didn't, this is, like, the fifth meeting I'll have gone to in, like, a month, because there were, like, very few meetings I could go to. And it's just, I feel, like, really, really unwell. And then from there, it sort of pivots into, like, well, maybe I should drink. You know, all these other people are drinking, maybe I can drink, type thinking. So meetings are biggest for me. I have a sponsor, of course, and he's taking me through the steps. But, you know, I also want to say, like, the biggest thing in my recovery lately has been getting a sponsee. And a lot of people told me that. They're like, dude, when you get a year, ask someone to try to put yourself out there in a way. It's like a mating dance, that people will want you to be their sponsor. And I have this guy now who I'm sponsoring who it's just, like, it's unbelievable. You know, it's sort of like, I love the nature of a relationship that has nothing to do with me. It's like, when I talk to this guy, just the very structure of the relationship is, he's like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm pretty good. So let's talk about you, you know? And it's like, I don't know how to describe it, but it completely transforms the way I, like, think about the day. I don't think about myself. That's the key, you know? It's like, just takes my mind away from myself. Calling people, you know, there's a lot of people, everybody has their own, I don't know if anyone else experiences this, but, like, in meetings sometimes, there are certain people, but when they speak, I sort of, like, listen, you know, because I feel like they say something that I connect with a lot. And there's this guy uptown, Peter, who, like, you know, who smoked crack for, like, 25 years, you know, and he's been sober for 10 years. And so when I have these feelings of, like these cravings, these, like, this hunger, this animal in me to get high and to drink, he's the guy I call. Because I'm if anybody can relate to that, you know, this guy can help me. And he, like, he's talked me off the ledge, like, a million times. And that whole, I don't know, a lot of people, of course, get cravings to use. And I just got to say, like, I went through that hard for a long time. And it goes away. It really doesn't last. Like, if you're in that moment right now, or you feel like you've been in that moment for a few weeks, it does go away. We have that little saying, like, the obsession was lifted, you know? Some people will say that for them, had that experience, like, right away or after a couple months or 6 months. I feel like the obsession only, like, came on to me after a year. Because the first year, I was just, like, it was just momentum. It was, like, life was just so horrible that I sort of was going to stay sober just because it was new. And I, like, had this, like, momentum carrying me. And then it kind of is, like, okay, now I have to start running. You know, I'm going to start slowing down here. And when craving comes on, it's just, like, I think a lot of people who don't have addiction issues think that, like, a craving is, like, something that enters your worldview, and you can be like, okay, I'm experiencing craving now. I'm going to hold on to my seat for 20 minutes until it passes, because that's what the literature says. And then, but it's not like that for me. Like, it's like any emotion, you know? It's like, I am craving. It's not like I can see it separately. It's like my whole being, you know? Same thing for, like, anger and, like, self-pity. That's a huge thing for me. All these, like, these are going into more of the defects, or, like, entitlement or sadness or whatever. When those things come on to me, it's so like freakishly powerful that I don't even know it's there, you know? It's just, and it's like, so if anyone's going through that, you know, it goes away. It really does go away. Just like, just keep coming to AA, keep going to a meeting. If you go, they used to say this thing a lot uptown at this meeting I went to, if you haven't had a drink or a drug today, no matter what else you've done, you're a fucking winner, you know? And like, it's kind of corny, but I love that. And I told that to my sponsee today. It's like, he's like, I didn't do shit today. I slept late. I didn't go to work. And I was like, you know what, dude, you have like 5 months of sobriety and you didn't pick up a drink. Like, you haven't, like, you're like fresh off the boat and you like didn't, you haven't had a drink and you haven't like smoked any crack today, you know? Like, this is huge. And it's not just like a nominal victory. It's a real victory. It's like something about every day just staying sober changes the way that I have been able to like perceive reality and like live in the world, you know? It's like, it's not doing nothing to stay sober. It's doing something. It's not like you either use drugs and go back or you do nothing. It's like just not using is keeping you going forward, in my opinion. There is like healing in the brain that happens every day, especially in the beginning. So there's like the craving, it goes away, you know, it really does, and it comes back for me, but it can go away again. It goes away more often when I go to a lot of meetings, when I'm checking in with my sponsor a lot, when I'm checking in with my sponsee a lot, when I'm fellowshipping. That's been, as I said, you know, like the breaking out of the isolation part has been kind of hard for me, but, you know, if anyone's looking for a good group of fellowship, this obviously has a really strong fellowship component to it, but you know, like the midnight 10 p.m. meeting, it's like there's like such a great community down there, and it's sort of just like, I don't know, when I leave fellowship, I sort of feel like this sense of buoyancy that I don't feel any other time. It's just, I feel like there's no way I'm going to use after going to fellowship, you know? It's just, so there's so many solutions here. Oh, the final thing I'll say, and then I'll stop talking. The final plug I'll give for like sobriety for me, being able to not just stay sober, but to be emotionally centered and to actually want to live and be alive and functional and all that, is meditation for me. I've been into that for like a year and a half or so. There's actually a really great center down the block on 22nd Street. that's snapping. So meditation for me has been a way to like, I don't know, there's a lot to say about it, but there's something about, as I said before, when I feel a certain emotion, as I've been feeling today, it's sort of like is me, right? But with like just sitting and doing nothing else, I've been able to start to see that feelings, thoughts, self-criticism, like self-aggression, all that stuff, it's sort of like, it's like removed a bit now, and I can sort of observe it. And I think from there, then it just controls my life less. It's like, I feel like a lot of us, maybe just me, it's just like, I feel like I'm just controlled by whatever I'm feeling. I sort of act like a robot, you know? And it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to lead to using. It doesn't have to lead to isolation or to misery or to hiding in bed and hating myself for doing it 10 hours later. It's just like, there's a lot of freedom and there's a lot of beauty and life, and it's the summertime, you know? And I hope everyone has a sober night tonight and an enjoyable night. And thanks for letting me share. Thank you.